So welcome, everybody. This is the post-WCIT, the World Conference on International Telecommunications webinar on the 17th of January 2013. The time is 14:07 UTC. I have to welcome everyone to this call. I see there are a lot of people, so it seems to be a very popular subject. The first thing, I guess, is I will hand the floor over to Gisela Gruber, who will be providing us with the house rule. Gisela, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Olivier. Just a reminder that today we have the audio connected on the Adobe Connect room, and the microphones will be enabled at the end of the meeting. And also, if I could remind everyone to state their names when speaking, not only for transcript purposes, but also for our interpreters on the Spanish and French channel to allow them to identify the speakers on the language channel. If I could also please ask everyone to speak at a reasonable speed. And all lines will be muted except for those of the presenters during the presentation. And we will open all lines at the end for questions. Please do use the chat feature as well if you have any questions, and just start your post with question. Thank you. Over to you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Gisela. And I could also add that this session is completely recorded, and I believe it will also be transcribed. So welcome again, everyone. We have an interesting session here with various perspectives post WCIT from several people who have been at the World Conference on International Telecommunications in Dubai. Joining us are Nigel Hickson, Vice President for Europe, ICANN Global Stakeholder Engagement. Bill Drake, I guess, will be joining us soon. He's the chair of the NCEC, and he was a member of the U.S. delegation. Avery Doria is a civil society member of the U.S. delegation as well. Her WCIT and WTSA trip, which is the World Telecom Standards, was completely supported by Dot Gay LLC, and she lasted not only the 2 weeks of WCIT, but another within 1 or 2 weeks before that. So well done to her. Then we have Andres Piazza, LACNIC Public Affairs Officer, and myself as chair of the ALAC, but I was representing my company Global Information Highway in the UK delegation. After that, we'll have questions from the community. The times which are provided on the agenda at the moment are approximate, so we'll see 10, maybe a few more minutes, depending on how many questions we have. And then we will be looking at the challenges and opportunities for At Large and for ICANN. So without any further ado, I hand the floor over to Nigel Hickson, Vice President for Europe. Nigel?
Yes, well, thank you, and good afternoon, good morning, or good evening to anyone, depending where you are. And thank you very much for this opportunity. I'll be fairly brief because I know there's a lot of people to speak, and also I think it's valuable that we have a discussion. So I'm going to say something about what we took as the outcome of the wicket, and then a couple of observations on the challenges ahead and on the opportunities. So first of all, to the outcome, and I think anyone that wasn't at the wicket and read the extensive media coverage after the wicket might have been somewhat confused. I must say I've never read so much rubbish online for a long time. I think the coverage during the wicket generally was quite positive, but I found the coverage after the wicket to be somewhat less analytical and less factual. It wasn't the start of a new Cold War. It wasn't a disaster. It wasn't a success. It was a process. And I think those of us that had been involved in ITU negotiations before were not surprised at what happened at the wicket. I'm not saying what happened was good or bad. but it was a process, and it was a process that failed. It failed for a number of reasons, and many people will have different perspectives on that. But I think it's important to grasp that it didn't fail because there was a fundamental divide over those that supported the internet as a free, open, and sort of innovative force, and those that wanted it closed down. I mean, clearly there is a divide between countries, but the outcome of the wicket was rather more complicated than that. It failed really at the last moment, and those of us that were there would have recognized, and no doubt Olivier will say more on this, that had not a proposal been made during the last plenary session concerning non-discriminatory access, which was an existing article that was not an existing article, but it was a proposal that had been deleted from the compromise and then came back through an African proposal into the preamble. Had that not been put forward, then it's likely that the discussion post-wicket would have been different, because we might have had a handful of countries reserving their position and saying they probably would not sign the treaty, whereas the vast majority would have signed, including the majority of European countries. So often in these negotiations, a lot depends on sort of relatively small events. So the outcome is where we are, of course, and the factual outcome is that the treaty will come into effect on the 1st of January 2015, the new treaty of the International Telecommunication Regulation. For those that have signed up to it, it will have effect if they give it effect in their national legislation, and for those that don't sign up to it, it might still have an effect because of the impact on international telecommunication companies. The associated resolutions came into effect once the treaty was signed, so to speak, by the countries, and therefore the resolutions, including the resolution 3 concerning the internet, comes into effect. So on to the challenges, and I think, you know, the challenges are fairly clear, and you might say the challenges are linked to the opportunities. The challenges are to address the concerns that were raised during the negotiation. Unless we want to enter a somewhat of a protracted Cold War, so to speak, on the internet, then if we are going to move forward together, if we are going to maintain a single, interoperable and open internet, then some of the challenges that were raised by the developing countries and other countries have to be addressed. And some of these challenges can and will be addressed, no doubt, by the internet community and by other parts of the global community. And these challenges include fairly sort of basic telecommunications issues concerning the security of networks, concerning the access to networks, concerning the cost of broadband, and various other issues. And, of course, some of the more complex issues concerning countries' security in terms of what is said and what is not said on the internet, and of course those issues are more difficult to address. It is clear that one of the challenges is the polarization of those countries that perhaps felt that their concerns and aspiration and views were not taken account of during the wicket, and that of course could lead into further negotiation and further conflict, if you like, at the WTPF and other multilateral discussions going forward into 2014 and 2015, culminating in 2014 with the plenipotentiary, and in 2015 with the final summit or the final meeting in the UNGA on the WSIS review. So a lot of challenges for the future. But to finish my remarks, let me just say I think there is also opportunities. I think the openness of some of the discussions at the wicket showed us that there are indeed opportunities that we can address opportunities, both with those countries that took a different view from the Western view, so to speak, or the different view from those of us supporting an open, interoperable internet, but also the countries that were undecided, the countries that may sign or may not sign, but basically were undecided in terms of the multi-stakeholder approach. And those countries, I think there is a lot of work to do with to ensure that they do recognize, or to try and allow them to recognize, what indeed the multi-stakeholder approach can bring to innovation and economic growth. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nigel. It's Olivier for the transcript, the interpretation. Thank you for this this summary of what your views are. What we will do, we'll go through all of the speakers, and then we'll have the questions afterwards. So if you do have questions, please save them for later. I understand that next on the list is Bill Drake, but he has a few audio problems at the moment. So Avery Doria, civil society member of the U.S. delegation. Avery, are you ready for your summary of what your thoughts are? You have the floor.
This is Avery Doria, and of course, I'm always ready to prattle on about my thoughts. In listening to Nigel, the first thing that comes up was a statement that it failed. I don't think WICKET failed. I don't think so at all. I think what has failed a lot is a lot of people's views of WICKET. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that what I've read is rubbish, but I would certainly say that I disagree with a lot of what I've read. I don't think it failed, first of all, because WICKET was really just one event in a long string of events, starting from WISIS, extending through, in this current phase, through the plenipotentiary in 14, and so on. There are many skirmishes. What was really actually quite successful at WICKET is for the discussion about internet governance to have sort of opened up to a full view of what a festering postural discussion really is. We could see it. We could see the various points of view. We could see how seriously they're taken by various people. We can see the sort of backroom dealing that's going on with it. So in that respect, in the respect of sort of opening up a discussion once again to the full light of day, I think WICKET was very successful. I think WICKET was successful in another way. As a civil society activist, we once again managed to make the point that ITU has no validity because it doesn't include us. Now, I don't believe that anything will change, not this time. In fact, you know, we've gotten our answer back from the ITU in a very diplomatic middle finger note telling us that, you know, thank you, civil society. It was very nice talking to you. It was very nice you were here. But no, we're not going to change anything. So that means that battle goes on. But again, that was the case.
Yeah, sorry. Could you please slow down?
And is there any way I can slow down? Thank you very much.
Is there any way that you could speak a little closer to your mic or a little louder? There are people
I suppose I could shout. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So I won't bother to repeat what I've said, so I'm almost finished anyway. Now, in terms of the treaty, we talk as if this treaty was a done deal. It isn't. This treaty certainly has been negotiated. There will be signing. There will be other people signing it along the way. A lot of the countries that did not sign it will eventually sign it. There's a lot of good stuff in that treaty that shouldn't be ignored in terms of access for the disabled, in terms of access for landlocked countries, and other things that are important and should not be lost. And I'm very much hoping that the countries that didn't sign it are still willing to follow those patterns. We have not only the WTPF in the near future that's going to actually directly address internet governance, but still exclude civil society it appears. That is an important discussion. In other words, we may have argued that Internet governance was off the table at WTSA and WCCID, but it is certainly on the table at WTPS. We also have the plenipotentiary in 14, which certainly for civil society becomes one of the bigger meetings, because that becomes a time where we once again get to fight in an environment that actually can decide to let us in. So as I say, to call WCCID a failure at the moment is too much surrender for me. The WCCID was just one instance. It was a skirmish in which both sides lost a little, and I think both sides have sort of strengthened their position a little. And I think it really needs to be looked at in that context, not in context of we lost, they won, we are good, they are bad, but rather an ongoing tussle between two very pervasive worldviews. I think one of the things we have to avoid is sort of the hyperbolic discussion of Internet Cold Wars. We have to really remember what a Cold War is. A Cold War is what you do when you're not firing bullets at each other. I do not believe that what is happening in this Internet governance tussle in any way resembles a Cold War. And so I think we have to avoid that kind of inflammatory sort of FUD, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt about this discussion. I do not believe this will lead to a shooting war. I do not believe failures here will lead to a shooting war, et cetera. So this is not a Cold War. This is a political tussle, a tussle of various points of view. I am unabashedly on the side with ISOC and those who stood firmly in terms of we must defend the multi-stakeholder Internet, at least as their argument, if not necessarily their practice. But, you know, it would have been nice had ICANN been there, had ICANN actually managed to find a way to participate as opposed to just having a few of its people inside other delegations. I think it was nice that the ITU invited ICANN CEO to speak, and I thought he gave a very nice conciliatory speech. But if ICANN really wants to have something to say in about all of this, then they need to participate. And basically, being on the outside and just getting in through governments is as bad for them as it is for civil society. So they have to find a way to participate, perhaps even work with civil society in terms of trying to open it up, though that would be a new development. So I think, you know, that's pretty much how I got to start. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Avery, for this other point of view and other angle to the WCIT. Certainly interesting to see some of the points you made as to it not being a Cold War, not being a war at all, being just a process and work going on. I think we can move to our next panelist, and that's Andres Piazza, who is the LACNIC Public Affairs Officer. Andres was also present at the conference representing LACNIC. So, Andres, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Olivier. Good, let's say, afternoon here in Montevideo, and well, evening or morning, wherever you are. It's always a pleasure for me to be part of an event held by the ICANN at large community. I feel like home when I am in the ICANN at large, and I feel I've been involved in this community for more than 5 years. So despite the fact that now I represent an IP registry, I feel part of the community also, so it's very good to be here. With that said, I want to also, well, it's good that Nigel and Avery have spoken before me, because most of the facts that they addressed at their previous speech, I would have liked to address as well. So now I have to agree with them, and it's easier. I felt personally, and I will speak personally in this matter. I felt kind of uncomfortable of what I saw after the weekend, especially the whole the lot of press and messages regarding what was understood as the outcome of the weekend. And we have been following the process from the inside. Even I was at the WTSA meeting previous to the weekend, and the process was much more complex and interesting than what the press and most of the internet activists also took as the outcome of the weekend. And of course, I would agree at all that this is not at all a Cold War moment, and this analysis wouldn't be at all factual. And Latin American region, the region I represent, it's also this is the example, I think the most concrete example about how this is not a polarized scenery and not at all a Cold War scenery as well, because the Latin American region with the Americas, the whole Americas region with the U.S. and Canada and the Caribbean were part of the CETEL bloc, the CETEL regional meetings were held daily in a daily basis in the week, and there was also a lot of inter-American proposals. And I've been following the previous year preparatory meetings. There were three different preparatory meetings a year before and some months before the weekend, and also the Caribbean preparatory meetings. And never in the whole preparatory processes, and never during the weekend, there was a single proposal from our region that could threaten the multi-stakeholder model or the open internet. But most of the countries ended voting for the treaty. Most of them, and the night before, some of the Latin American countries that were not that ended not signing the treaty were supporting the text, and then their foreign affairs ministers didn't allow them to sign the treaty. But you never know if they are going to sign this treaty in the future. And this wouldn't mean at all that this treaty would threaten the open internet and the multi-stakeholder model, and wouldn't mean at all that there is, at least in my region, a lack of understanding of the purposes of the multi-stakeholder model, the philosophy that is behind, the way that ICANN and the other organizations are running the internet right now, the ICANN, the ITF, the RARs, and the standard bodies, and every other single CCTLDs and other organizations, and as they are understanding this multi-stakeholder model, but they are also considering that this treaty could be good for them. So we have to open we have to go forward for this polarized scene, and we can analyze the treaty. Two other aspects Avery mentioned that this treaty is good in many matters, such as the access to the disabled and the access to the language of countries, for example, and I agree with that also. I would say that there are some concerns regarding the two articles, one in security and the other one in unsolicited communication, that could refer, that it's not clear, but could refer to spam. And the problem that it is not clear is that it doesn't say spam. The definition of telecommunications doesn't apply to the internet, but when you read that article, it could remain referred to spam. So that lack of clarity is also some of the problem. And another point that I wanted to stand out is regarding the openness and transparency of the process. There was a lot of discussion previous to the weekend regarding how this event would be, or how the threat is that this is a closed discussion, and the future of the internet would be discussed in a multilateral treaty conference that is closed for the open for the public. And there was a lot of progress. We have to, as internet organizations, we have to accept that the wiki was a huge progress in a multilateral environment. And there has been, I must say, and this is also personal, I've never seen, and I believe that there was never in the whole history a treaty conference, a multilateral treaty conference, that has been this open. But with that said, see this phenomenon from the perspective of the internet discussions, the internet organizations, and the way we develop our policy and development process. And this huge step forward in transparency and openness with webcast, not only for the main session, but also from the conf5 and with live captioning and a lot of attention that the conference was gaining. But this is not enough for us, because our standards, the internet standards, are much higher in terms of transparency and openness. So we, as the community, we need to stand out that and to keep pushing for this type of governmental conferences to be even more transparent and open, even from the previous process, because the problem with the wikis is that the documents were available at the conference, but not before. So, this is, to sum up this last part, I think it's very important for our community in terms of the challenges that we have in the future, but also Nigel summarizes those challenges very well, the WTPF, and also the WISIS plus 10 process, and I would add to that the IP addresses discussion that would be held in the study groups 2 and 3 of the ITU, because the outcome of the WTSA conference was one part of the outcome was a discussion regarding the possibility of creating an ITU IP addresses registry, and this discussion was postponed for those study groups at the ITU, so that is interesting to watch also. But regarding openness and transparency, I would sum up that that was a great step forward. This is the way for the governmental conferences, but it's not enough at all compared to our standards as internet community. So that would be my main point to stand out. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Andres. Interesting that, yes, the ITU has conducted a successful multilateral meeting, but moving towards full stakeholders and full multi-stakeholderism is something which is still far away on the radar. And, of course, anything to do with the Internet is all multi-stakeholder. Just a reminder, the questions will be coming afterwards when we've heard from all the speakers. So now, next on the speaker list is Bill Drake, who is the chair of the NCUC and member of the U.S. delegation. Bill, are you able to speak now?
I am able to speak. Are you able to hear?
Fantastic. Go ahead, Bill. You have the floor.
All righty. Great. Hi, everybody. Well, I was asked to talk 5 minutes about the WICKET and the ITRs, and that's a subject that normally I talk much greater length about. So for me, it's always difficult to decide exactly what to highlight. I guess I'll just do 5 quick points in 5 minutes. Huh? The first point, I guess, would have to be, Avery said this is one step in a larger process that began with the WISIS and so on. I would put it a little bit more broadly. To me, and I say this with my academic hat on as somebody who wrote his doctorate about the ITU and has written extensively about the history of international telecommunication arrangements and so on, for me, this trajectory starts in 1850. It starts with the Treaty of Dresden, which created the Austro-German Telegraph Union. And the reason I say that is because that the fundamental principle underlying that agreement was also underlying the ITRs ever since, and was incorporated into the ITRs ever since, and was very much at play here. And that is to say, there were basically two aspects of this. One is the money. The ITR is fundamentally about the money at some level. We have a history in international telecommunications of having what are called joint service provisioning, where you have an accounting and settlement system, and you count up all the minutes exchanged over telephone lines or telegraph lines in different directions, and then you apply various formulas, and you have carriers compensating each other according to this framework. And that was built into the international telecom regime since 1850. It was fundamental to it. It was the political glue that held everything together, because no side was competing against or winning over another side. Each set of national carriers was cooperating and mutually benefiting. And that framework has fallen apart in the past decade or two. And essentially what this was an effort by countries to try to recover lost ground, because developing country administrations in particular have taken a real financial hit since the collapse of the accounting and settlement system due to the World Trade Organization agreements, the actions of the Federal Communications Commission in the United States to benchmark rates for compensation and so on. So they were trying to recover lost ground economically by establishing a framework that would give them an internationally recognized right to essentially apply this kind of approach to telecommunications traffic once again, and by extension also to the Internet. And the ETNO proposal made that very clear, and of course the ETNO proposals were very influential on the thinking of a lot of the African and Arab and other countries. So it was very much an issue about how the money gets divided up at the global level, and that's a long, it doesn't go away with the end of the wicket. The countries whose governments were unhappy before are still unhappy. The operating entities that are struggling to pay for bandwidth rollouts and everything else and cover all their other costs still are doing that and are still unhappy with the situation, etc. The other aspect of this model going back to 1850 that's worth highlighting here is the notion that everything is done by mutual consent. And, you know, that was really, as I say, key to the whole joint service provisioning approach. You didn't have national carriers taking actions against each other and trying to trump each other. They were working together in a collaborative manner. And this is sort of viewed as a natural right of sovereign states to be able to expect certainty and clarity in all the actions of their corresponding countries. And what happened, of course, over the past 20 years with liberalization is that a lot of telecommunications now is not by mutual consent. You have a lot of stuff that's a lot of means to deliver transmissions into countries over international networks that are not agreed to by the inbound carrier, whether it's internet telephony or callback services or international simple resale or hubbing or other kinds of approaches for spinning traffic around the world. And so that was really a very, I think, important thing, because a lot of countries that are upset with the U.S. and other industrialized countries about the outcome of this still kind of feel like, you know, the world is, the powerful players are basically acting in a way that ignores their interests and just does whatever they want. So that's an issue. Second point quickly, on the ITU, I think the ITU really misplayed its hand. I think that's very clear. They mispositioned themselves by aligning themselves with the secretariat, by aligning itself with a particular set of players and their agenda vis-a-vis others, while constantly insisting at the same time that they're a bottom-up representative body that is there to simply service the needs of members. That had, a pretty negative impact, the discrepancy, on the perception of a lot of actors, and I think it has not done the ITU any good. I think the ITU has been damaged by this event. Third, I would say there's an outstanding issue that we have to deal with over the longer term, which is the boundary line between telecom and the Internet. That was an underlying problem throughout all of this with the convergence to IP core networks. It's very difficult to say, really, for a lot of carriers, where telecom begins and ends vis-a-vis the Internet, and whether or not these rules that they've adopted are going to apply to the Internet, irrespective of whether the word Internet is associated with the rule. I think if you look, and Andreas made the point about the spam provision, it's very clear to anybody who was there, even if the article doesn't say the word Internet, that the unsolicited bulk communication or whatever it was, that's about the Internet, okay? That's what's intended. And that's true of a number of the different provisions. People say, I've heard a number of times, oh, the word Internet is not in the text, therefore, what's everybody complaining about? But anybody who was there, who followed the whole legislative history, understands fully that it was the intention of the parties that put these texts forward that the texts do apply to the Internet. So how that's going to play out going forward is going to be a very interesting question, which leads to the next point very quickly, which is the impact of all this. I think you could see some fragmentation as different blocks of countries begin to follow different rules in organizing their mutual relations. I would keep an eye in particular on Russia and the CIS countries and some of the Arab countries and how they will go about interpreting and implementing this agreement irrespective of the fact that 55 other countries didn't sign it. And lastly, I would say the World Telecom Policy Forum that's coming up in May will build on a lot of these discussions. The parties that were aggrieved by the outcome are putting forward a lot of texts for this upcoming event that the ITU is holding that I think people really need to pay attention to. And in particular, there's opinions, draft opinions that have to do with establishing the ITU as the vehicle for enhanced cooperation on all Internet affairs and so on. And that meeting will be held the next week or the week prior to the IGF meetings in Geneva in May. And it's not clear right now whether civil society will be able to participate fully or on what terms. So I hope that people will take some action to ask the ITU to live by the words that it's been articulating lately and make this a more open and multi-stakeholder event. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Bill, for this additional insight and certainly for this historical background to how we reached today. Next on the list is myself, and what I wanted to do was just to add a couple of points based on our distinguished speakers' interventions. I was part of the UK delegation. Sorry, myself is Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. I was part of the UK delegation, and I'll just make those points as personal points on what I saw and what's happened, etc. First, Nigel Hickson had mentioned that the press coverage during the conference was fine. I am not quite sure I agree with that. I think that the way that the process of the ITU is one which really is very, very compartmented. So the plenaries were accessible to the press. The plenaries were accessible to sector members, to everyone. As soon as a contentious issue came up, and you know, the way that the ITRs were drafted was to go line by line, and the chair of the conference, who was local host, the chair of the conference basically went line by line, and as soon as there was some sticky point, which showed that there was some disagreement. At that point, this would be sent over to one of the main working groups. They have COM5 working groups would be dealing specifically with some of the most contentious ITRs. Then the COM5 working group would meet, sometimes in the main room, sometimes in a second room next to it. It would, again, another chair would be going through those lines if those lines, the articles were not agreed on. Then it would be sent over to a smaller working group, an ad hoc working group, or what they call an informal working group. And those ones were not accessible to the press. They were only accessible to governments, so only accessible to full members. Now, what happened inside there was where the real work and the real discussion took place, and sometimes very heated discussion, I would say, but away from the eyes of the outside world, hoping that by the time people left the room, things had all been agreed, consensus had been found, and one could show a positive face back in the plenary when it was sent back over to the plenary. In some cases, there was no deal made, so at the end of the day, it went back to the plenary, and this is really how the conference became more and more tense as time went on, because one could see outside those conference rooms that there had been no consensus in those small working groups. In addition to this, though, the small working groups at some point reached such deadlock that the chair asked that there would be some meetings of the different regions. Now, the different regions were touched on. There's several regions in the ITU. So there's the APT, the Asia-Pacific Telecommunity. There is the ATU, that's the African Telecommunication Union. I'm just listing not all the regions, just the main players who were very active there. There's the CEPT, the European Conference of Postal and Telecommunications Administrations. There is CITEL, which my friend and colleague Andres Piazza has mentioned. That's the Inter-American Telecommunications Commission. There is the LAS, the League of Arab States, commonly known as the Arab position. And the RCC, Regional Commonwealth in the Field of Communications, which is Russia and its satellites. And then there are a number of unaligned members of the ITU, so they're not part of a specific region. And so when things really started going to a head on those articles that were the most contentious, or most disputed, should we say, on several occasions, the chair of the conference called for a closed-door meeting of the chairs and perhaps a couple of their colleagues of each one of the of these regions. The feedback that I have from the discussion that took place there, so here we're dealing with just something behind closed doors, even to the majority of the delegates and the majority of the government delegates, and a huge amount of pressure on the chairs of each one of those regions to be able to hold their ground. So the discussions that took place were rather heated, and the feedback that I do get is that there was some kind of deadlock, because of course no one in those very small, maybe 20, 25 people discussion. You have to remember that there were about 1,500 people at the conference. You then have 25 people behind closed doors that have to negotiate these things, which might affect the future of telecommunications. Most of the people did not want to move forward without consulting their team, without consulting their government. So we ended up in a deadlock on several points. The main sticky points, we have touched on a few of them. I'd like to say that there are about 20 articles in the regulations. There were only a few that were very, very sticky. The first one was the human rights, which was introduced by Tunisia. And this was a sticky point. It was going to, initially it was a proposal for the first article, but then it was proposed to be the preamble. And that's really what then led to the breakup of the whole conference at the end when the when some states wanted to add the access to telecommunication networks. In fact, that was proposed initially by Cuba as Article 3.7. Because there was a refusal and it did not go through at the last, very last minute, several countries tried to push it over to the preamble. Article 1.1a, the use of telecommunications versus the use of ICTs, very sticky point. ICTs is information and communication technologies. That, of course, includes IT, so it includes computers. Telecommunications is just the telecommunication part of things. And there was consensus that was found to replace all matters when needed with telecommunications, not with ICTs. Article 1.2 was the operating agency versus the recognized operating agency. The recognized operating agency was what was in the 1988 ITRs. That is, it has a specific definition in the ITU rules. An operating agency includes a lot more people that would fall and a lot more organizations that would fall under these regulations. So that was opposed by Europe and by North America and by various other countries as well, because, of course, that would have brought in line any internet service provider and even corporate networks, virtual private networks, and perhaps even, because the term was ill-defined, the operating agency term was ill-defined, it might have also even included you yourself at home operating your own Wi-Fi network at home. So thankfully, there was a consensus filed on this with an authorized operating agency, although now the question is, what is an authorized operating agency? It was clear that to some countries, keeping the term recognized operating agency was not possible for them either. The case of Russia, who explained that they have many different operators and many different commissions and departments. Some of them are recognized, some of them are not recognized, so they needed another term for this. Then Article 3.8 was the management of internet resources. That never made it to the final proposal. There was a bit of a drama, I would say, on the weekend in between the 2 weeks when this article was proposed by, had been proposed by Russia, was then somehow left on the side. During the weekend, the Arab group said that they would be reintroducing it, and then it was leaked over the weekend because they were going to introduce it on Monday. And right after it was leaked, a couple of days later, it was again retrieved and taken out. But then Russia always kept this article, the management of internet resources, which was very explicit in taking over internet management. This was always kept lingering around, saying, if you do not agree to some of the other articles, then we might have to go back to this one, and we will ask for the full article to be included. And then, as it was mentioned earlier by my colleagues, Article 5A on security and Article 5B on unsolicited communications. These two articles, this article in two bits, remained in the ITRs, and this was really one of the strong problems for most European countries, and I would say also for for North America and many other countries as well. Some European countries thought that with some wordings, maybe some added wording, the security part might be acceptable. The unsolicited communication part was definitely very strange because it said in there that it was not dealing with content, but it was obvious that the subject of it was spam, and I'm not quite sure, and I think many people were not quite sure, how one would be able to detect spam without actually reading the message itself. The way that spam is detected is to actually look at it. So you cannot know whether a communication is solicited or not unless you read it. And that, if taken with a recent regulation, Y2770, which asks for deep packet inspection to be put in place in all future networks, that opened the door to having a future network, and call it internet, call it anything else, the future network actually being filtered and scanned by states, not scanned by your private organization that you ask to scan your emails if you wish to have spam or a security in your network. It really is a case of governments taking care of that. Article 6 was on charging and accounting. A lot of discussion went in that, and actually consensus was found. So it was not all just negative. You know, many of the articles, the ones that I have not mentioned here, have actually passed quite easily, and there was consensus found and success, and everyone agreed. Article 6 took quite a while for it to be discussed because, of course, charging and accounting, there was a proposal that a sender pays system would come in place, and if that was the case, then and if this was not related to content, then how would the sender be paying if it doesn't include content? So there were some questions on this, but thankfully consensus was found. And finally, the really contentious part, and I think that the mood of the conference did change somehow, was when a resolution to foster an enabling environment for the greater growth of the Internet was passed through a vote that was not a vote, or technically not a vote, but in fact there was never any actual discussion as to the contents of this resolution. And what many of the countries, and I'm saying the countries that I was aware of by having been in all the EU, so European Union meetings, many countries were unhappy that the discussion in there, this specific resolution, did not include multi-stakeholderism as we know it, and did not include the promotion of the current multi-stakeholder internet, such as the RIRs and ICANN and the IETF and the W3C, etc. It was something that should have been discussed and might have passed had it been discussed. But here it was just somehow pushed through with a very, very confusing process. Now, ultimately, there were a number, as you've just heard, a number of points which countries were not happy with. But I think that some countries that have not signed could have probably signed, but with a very strongly worded reservation about the articles, which were not acceptable to them, and just pointing also the resolution that was not acceptable to them. However, the non-discriminatory access was really the deal breaker, the feather that breaks the camel's back, I guess one could say. It was a tense meeting, and unfortunately, it just came to a head a lot faster than some thought that it was going to come. One thing of note: the European Union kept as one block. So the discussions behind the closed doors in the European Union were very sustained, and there were a whole range of views from those who were adamant about not signing to those who thought that the majority of the articles were okay for them. However, it was clear that in the last session, when the non-discriminatory access of countries to telecommunication was equated with human rights. And you have to remember, Europe is very strong on human rights. When this was equated, and one has to remember that some countries have lost or have discriminated access due to their poor record on human rights, it was clear that this was not going to fly. And so Europe unanimously decided to not sign. Now, this is not to say that there might not be some European countries that will sign in the future. it is unsure at the moment, and I do know that the European Union are going to meet and are going to follow up on this. But for the time being, it is clear that I certainly have not heard that there has been any movement in that direction until everyone actually meets up and sees what one can do. Because it is a problem. The main problem today is that no one knows what happens when you have a vote. Chairman Touré, the chair of the ITU, had said if the ITU, if the WCIT ends up as a vote, it will be a failure. And yet, so he wanted consensus to rule, and yet consensus was not found, and it ended up with a vote which split totally the membership. And now one really doesn't know where one goes, because if only half or maybe two-thirds of countries decide to ratify something and one-third does not, does that mean that this one-third is still subjected to those regulations or not? It's a big question. So I'm not quite sure what the answer will be, and I don't think anyone at the moment knows what the answer will be. But what is clear is that we do have two blocks, and I'm sorry to be saying that. But clearly, on the one hand, Western countries are following an agenda of market liberalization. And this is an agenda that has been followed for a long time, and the Internet is an example of market liberalization. On the other side, other countries have a much more conservative top-down model where the nation-state has more control. And it is, of course, their right to have whatever model they want, but these two models appear to have problems mixing with each other. So I'm sorry to have taken a little more time than perhaps being allocated here, but now we have another half an hour until the end of this meeting, but I wanted to then move to the next part, which is the questions from the community. How are we going to do this? Gisela, are we having the questions written down, or is it possible to open the mics and then let people put their hand up to ask questions? And I don't hear anyone answering me at the moment, so...
Hi, Olivier, sorry.
I thought I might have been disconnected for the past half an hour, and that would have been a real problem.
as you wish. We have a lot of questions in the chat, if you want to start with those, and then we can follow up if we run out of time by posting those questions into this wiki page we've created.
Okay. So if you have questions, you can do it in two ways. Either you type the question in the chat, or you can put your hand up. On the top of your screen, you will see there's a little person with a hand up. It's a set status, and you can raise your hand, and the system will automatically queue you up on the side. I've recorded a few questions, one which was to Avery, and I'm not sure if Avery has had to go already, but it was, may you elaborate on the WTSA?
Okay, I'm still here because I haven't been able to get into my other phone call. This is Avery. To elaborate on the WTSA would take a lot longer than this phone call, but basically it was about the new standardization work that would be going on, everything from looking at which study groups would continue and what their tasks would be, to electing the chairs of those groups. So it was 2 weeks spent more on looking at issues about what technical issues. One of the issues that did come up in that was the request to initiate work on creating an ITU registry. Now, that did not go through ISOC and ARIN, and the IRRs played quite a strong role in that, as did several of the national delegations. The U.S. delegation was actually quite active in trying to stop that. Now, I don't believe that it has been completely stopped. And there were intermediate thoughts about, well, perhaps they can't be a registry, but perhaps they can do something to broker IPv4 legacy address, the ability to obtain IPv4 legacy addresses or something. So I think we have yet to see what they're going to do based on that. In other aspects, it was more nitty-gritty of various technical issues and should the ITU work on these or not. There was the approval of the deep packet inspection work that had been going on for years, et cetera. So that was the WTSA, though, is a group that meets periodically, and I believe it's a four-year cycle, to decide on the technical work that the ITUT will be doing over that next cycle. Hope that helps a little. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Avery. So I see Tijani has put his hand up, Tijani Benjamin, but he has just dropped offline. So next we have Gideon from .connect Africa. Gideon, you have the floor.
Okay, I am on the bridge again now.
Okay, Tijani, sorry, I've given the floor to Gideon. I'll come to you in a moment.
Yes, okay. Thank you, Olivier.
No, Tijani, Tijani. No. Hello? Tijani, first there's someone else before you.
Okay, thank you.
If we're able to get Gideon. And you might be muted. Okay, while we have, Gideon is not able to come through at the moment, so let's go for Tijani in the meantime, and Gideon, we'll try and see if someone can help you to get connected and be able to speak. Tijani, go ahead.
Thank you, Olivier. It's only to say that I am so happy by the presentation, by the positive and constructive presentations done. And I do agree with Avery that ICANN must participate in the future in all those fora of ITU and participate and speak, participate in full delegation. And I think that ICANN must try to have this status of delegation, full delegation in those fora so that ICANN can speak up. If it is accepted, I do propose that the delegation must be constituted by all the constituencies of ICANN so that the voice of ICANN will be heard at those fora. I think with that it is not too bad, the result of the wiki. People was very frightened by this conference, but I think that it wasn't a catastrophe, as you said, as you explained. So we need to do more to make the multi-stakeholder model working everywhere. So we have two things to do, at least for us as civil society. First, to lobby in the UN environment, because the problem of the multi-stakeholder is not an ITU problem, it's a UN problem. So we have to continue to advocate there that we need the multi-stakeholder model to be working, and we have another way to work. It is inside ICANN, so that ICANN will be recognized by ITU as a delegation that has the right to speak, to negotiate, and the delegation must be constituted by all the constituencies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. Nigel Hexon?
Yeah, yes, thank you very much indeed. Just to very briefly respond, and thank you very much, Tijani, for that. Thank you for that comment. I mean, ICANN's participation in the WICKED, as you know, was at two levels. One, we, Fadi Jihadi, addressed the opening, and we were very grateful to the ITU for that invitation. And we also conducted a number of bilaterals while we were there. And then, thanks to the generous hospitality of AP Nick, myself, and Bahir Esmet, were in that sector delegation, and also Veni Markovsky, as many of you will know, was fortunately able to be in the Bulgarian delegation. Now, I'm not suggesting that that was an ideal scenario. ICANN are not sector members, therefore we could not, if you like, have a sector member flag like ISOC or APNIC, etc. That is an issue that the ICANN board have been addressing, and certainly colleagues as members of the ICANN community, I mean, please bring it up at Beijing, I mean, or at any other suitable fora. I mean, it's an issue on the table. If we were sector members, we could have been there behind our flag. Whether we would have been able to speak or not is a different matter. I don't think any sector members, any ITU sector members actually spoke in the main plenary session, but it is an issue for the future. Let me just say while I'm on, just two very brief points in terms of the conversation, and I should have said before that when I said that the wicket was a failure, I agree with Avery. I don't think it certainly wasn't a failure in terms of in terms of what we got out of it. Indeed, the ability of many of us to work together as a multi-stakeholder force, so to speak, between government, between ISOC, ICANN, the RIRs, and other players together to try and create a consensus, I think was very important indeed, and Avery was certainly instrumental in that. So I don't think that aspect was a failure, but clearly the outcome does create uncertainties. But thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Nigel, for your answer and your contribution. So now we have a question from Victor Ndonang, and his question is as follows. During the WCIT12 closing session, the ITU Secretary General said, "I look forward to the opportunities that lie ahead and all that can be achieved by ITU and ICANN together in a positive spirit of collaboration." So let me repeat once more, the ITU has no wish or desire to play a role in physical internet resources such as domain names. And the work of ICANN and ITU can be and should be fully complementary. In other words, close of quote. In other words, it seems like the WCIT12 was definitely about the it seems like the WCIT12 was definitely about the ITU controlling the internet, but not the ITU controlling the work of ICANN. Is that a result of the diplomatic work of ICANN, of the ICANN leading team, or a result of a secret arrangement between the ITU and ICANN? Can panelists please share their views and thoughts on that? Who wishes to answer this? And Nigel?
Bill,
secret arrangement? Well, Bill first, and let's see if Nigel can think of his secret arrangement. Bill, go ahead.
Okay. I'd have to say neither. ITU have bigger fish to fry than running the domain name industry, to be quite honest. The domain name industry is a pimple on the ass of the telecom industry. Telecom industry is huge in comparison. They would have liked to have had a bigger role in that, but it's been clear for a long time that politically they were not going to be given that possibility. So they're looking for other aspects of internet governance that they can squeeze their way into, and they've been pushing very aggressively on a number of different fronts, and that was manifested in this negotiation, but it was never really a real possibility that they would somehow seek to take over ICANN's functions. I mean, the Russians like to say things like that, but nobody seriously thought that that was an issue. With regard to distribution of IPv6, yes, there's still the fancy that they could get some sort of a role there as a global registry. But I think that the reality is that that's not very likely either, and I think they should know that. So I think that they're more focused on other aspects of internet governance.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Yes, thank you very much. I mean, just very briefly. I mean, the process was really as follows, that at the IGF in Baku, we arranged the staff, you know, myself in ICANN as a staff and staff in ITU, arranged a meeting between Hamidan Touré and Fadi Chahadi, you know, just to say hello, and, you know, because there's no reason that we shouldn't all talk together. We're all sensible adults, as they say. And, I mean, that meeting was very good at the IGF, and it led to an invitation that the ITU offered ICANN to come along to the wicket. Now, that invitation was, you know, was not trivial. I mean, it was an invitation that we considered very carefully. Some countries and some community members in ICANN thought that, you know, collaborating with the ITU on this issue was not appropriate. But others, including myself, as a member of staff, thought that indeed we needed to, you know, discuss things and indeed be there. And Fadi Chahadi indeed decided to, you know, to go along and make that keynote address. And it wasn't a secret deal at all. I mean, clearly we were very pleased that Hamidan Touré then responded with a statement that the ITU had no wish to sort of take over the ICANN role or be involved in the in critical internet resources. And, you know, I know we can discuss what that meant exactly, but you know, I think, you know, that was important in itself. And you know, during the wicket discussions, various people, you know, quoted that back. And, you know, there's a long road to go, but certainly our involvement, there was no secret deal at all. It's just really collaboration and working together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nigel. The next question is coming from Evan Leibovich, and that's a question for all speakers. And to follow up on points that Bill has made, at the start of the conference, ITU Chair Touré promised decision-making by consensus and that the Internet would not be brought into ICRs. At the conference, both those commitments were broken. Does this damage the ongoing viability and utility of the ITU, or is the main casualty just Touré? Now there is talk in some circles of defunding the ITU. To what extent is the ITU itself threatened? Provocative questions.
Okay, this is Bill.
Go ahead, Patrick.
I would say yes. I would say that Secretary General Touré had some very interesting rhetorical strategies and flourishes throughout this process, and claiming that everything would be consensus and the Internet would not be discussed was certainly a central part of that. It was very strange to continually insist on that when everybody in the room knew that that was not true. It was this weird kind of nod-nod, wink-wink thing. The Secretary was constantly saying, oh, yeah, we're not talking about the Internet. The Internet's not covered by this agreement. And then they would get up and make statements from the podium about how, well, the Internet's pervasive and impacts everything, and of course is central to everything we're doing. So, I mean, it's just kind of incoherent. I mean, people did kind of notice that after a while. It wasn't terribly convincing. I would have to say, though, that at the end of the day, the ITU is not really threatened in any substantial way. There's not going to be a defunding of the ITU. A couple of hot-headed people have been circulating that idea, but even in the U.S. delegation and elsewhere, I think people have been saying pretty clearly that the ITU serves other functions, and we don't wish to deepen the divide amongst the players involved by politicizing this more. So I don't think there's going to be any defunding at all. I do think that the legacy of the current Secretary General and his leadership is damaged. I mean, it's hard to see how that isn't the case. They put a lot of markers down on this thing. They said they were going to bring this to a successful conclusion. They had people walking around in Dubai pretty much pronouncing before the fact that that they had it, that it was all going to be worked out, that the agreement was going to be done, that it was all a big success.
And then 55 countries said no. That's a pretty substantial no, particularly since those 55 countries account for the lion's share not only of the ITU's funding, but of the global telecom and internet environment. So I don't think that this is terribly good for the organization or its aspirations, but there are nevertheless going to be countries that will continue to try to use it to push their agenda, and that's exactly what's going to be seen at the World Telecom Policy Forum in May. I mean, it's the same players, Saudi Arabia, China, et cetera, they're all going to come in with proposals to expand the ITU's ambit and strengthen its role vis-a-vis Internet issues. So this will be ongoing, but in terms of credibility with the countries that voted no, obviously there's been some change there.
Thank you, Bill. As some countries have said, this is a marathon, not a sprint. Andres Piazza, and then Nigel Hickson. You still have your hand up, so perhaps Nigel afterwards. So first, Andres Piazza.
Thanks, Olivier. Well, I also, Dean's analysis was pretty interesting, and I can agree on many of the issues he raised. So what I want to introduce a couple of points. The ITU situation, I wouldn't say that they are in a stronger position than before, but I wouldn't say that they are in a weaker position either. As Benny said, this is a warm-up from, the weekend was a warm-up from what should come in Plenipot 2014, and I was telling Evan Lebovich that in 1988, 22 countries signed the ITR, and now in 2012, there were 89 countries signing the ITR. So the situation in a relative position from the ITU, they got more attention than ever, and the consensus and the internet talking, okay, there was an agreement that the ITR shouldn't be about the internet, and they kept speaking about the internet during the whole conference. Of course, the agreement was broken, but there was also an agreement that the ITU shouldn't run, concept that there was an agreement that the ITU shouldn't run the critical internet resources, and this is broader than just ICANN. It's ICANN plus standard bodies plus RERs and CCTLDs and all those organizations. And also regarding, okay, I don't want to be naive. I think, okay, there will be a push in 2014 for making the scope of the ITU program to include the internet, but as the level of the discussion was much better and it's rising from each year compared to the past year, the discussion is much in a better position now than it was in 2005 or 2003 or at the WISIS process. So there is an agreement. Everyone understands that the ITU has a scope and the internet community has another scope, and we are doing well in this. In what we're doing, and of course the ITU is pushing and will be keep pushing, and they are not suffering of lack of legitimacy, as I would say, but on the other hand there is an interesting perspective considering the concepts that were addressed at this conference and the agreement that were made. Okay, they said we can't talk about the internet, because Tourette said at his last speech, we can, and they certainly can speak, and they did the resolution about the internet, but what is interesting that, okay, we would have liked that they won't be, that they are not speaking about the internet, but this is impossible if they have an interest, and if the country, the members are also interested in regulating or getting closer to the internet, but so it's hard to say even one or the other statement. This is my answer to Evan.
Thank you very much, Andres. We are running out of time. Clearly, we could have spent 2 hours on this subject rather than an hour and a half. There is one more question which I will take and pass over to Nigel, and that's one from Julie McPhee. Question is there a WFIS, so that's a World Society, the World Summit on Information Society, I believe, WFIS meeting in Paris in February 2013, and will ICANN be represented? And Avery mentions in the chat it's WSIS plus 10, so that's 10 years after the first WSIS, if I understand correctly. Nigel Hickson?
Yes, thank you very much indeed. Yes, of course, as I think Avery mentioned before, the really, you know, let's forget the wicket, well, let's not completely forget it, but the real game in town now is the World Summit on the Information Society and the review of that. So the WIS is plus 10. So this is the requirement by the United Nations General Assembly to, if you like, review what was agreed in Tunis by many of the people that are still here, and I'm sure Bill had a part in that and others did as well. The Tunis Agreement or the Tunis Agenda that was adopted in 2005 in Tunis, if you like, legitimized the multi-stakeholder approach and the roles of ICANN and other players. And there's a review of this process. And the first sort of conference to review this is being sponsored, is being organized by UNESCO in Paris in February. There's if anyone's interested in going, I think it's, you know, almost open invitation. There's UNESCO on the UNESCO site, and certainly ICANN will be involved. We're running some workshops with others, or, you know, we're participating in workshops with ISOC and the RIRs, and perhaps Fadi Chahadi might be able to go along as well and speak. But of course, it's not an ICANN show. It's for everyone to take part in this review. And of course, it's very important because it's not only Paris in February, but then again in Geneva in May when you have the yearly WSIS forum. That's important. And then in 2014, the ITU is going to organise a WSIS Plus 10 conference as well, probably in Cairo. So, you know, there's a lot at stake. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nigel. And I note that it's now been 25 minutes of questions, and we are running out of time. We still had an agenda item, which was the challenges and opportunities for at-large and ICANN. I wondered whether I could ask Nigel to say a few words about the challenges and opportunities for ICANN.
Well, I don't want to delay people. I think I've said enough. I think, you know, that as I said before, there are clear challenges that we and ICANN have got to do we've got to do a better job. We've got to step up to the plate. We've got to explain to people what ICANN. I mean, we have, as I say to people, you know, we have a natural monopoly, and we don't need to be defensive about that. Someone has to organize the domain name system, and it's ICANN at the moment, and we believe that through the ICANN community, we do a reasonable job, but we have to explain that. We have to ensure that all communities from the developing world and everywhere have an input into the policy-making process, and certainly the at-large community in ICANN is a key ingredient of that and does such a fantastic job, but other parts of the community do as well. So we have a challenge, but we also have this opportunity of involving everyone. And by, you know, if you involve everyone into this process, then you know, surely that they would see that this process is better, that everyone's involved, rather than a process where just governments are involved. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nigel. And I was going to add that for at-large specifically, because we are the part of ICANN that has a worldwide footprint, we do have 151 at-large structures now. In fact, there has been already certainly some influence from at-large structures into the way that things went at the WCIT. We had several members of at-large who were either in delegations or who actually were basically back home consulting for their government and helping out with their government's point of view. They are working locally And I think that there's a lot of work for us to be able to incorporate more of these countries into the multi-stakeholder model. Certainly, my personal discussions that I have had with some delegates, primarily delegates from Africa, was that they saw, as governments, they saw the WCIT as being a good, the WCIT and the ITU as being a good forum that was very helpful for them to take part in. They did not fully understand this whole concept of multi-stakeholder model, and specifically the although ICANN is very open, and as we all know, ICANN is always very welcoming for new members, sometimes we kid ourselves, and we tend to perhaps look too much inside and not look enough outside. So as far as outreach is concerned, there's a lot of work that this community here at large needs to do to go out there and liaise with the outside world and get more people involved and more governments and organizations involved in the model that we are that we all support, and certainly make it more easy for these organizations to take part and for these governments to take part. I have heard that, as we know, the ICANN community has got this glossary of terms, special language acronyms, etc., and sometimes it's very hard to make this accessible to people who just arrive. There's a lot of work on this that needs to be done, and I really do hope that there will be full support from ICANN for at large to be able to take a big part in this. My plan is to draft a longish review of what happened and to make some recommendations, and I think that this community will also draft a statement over to the board with some recommendations as to what needs to be done now. How can we make that multi-stakeholder model more accessible to some countries who at the moment don't understand it and certainly have not had the ability to join it? It's one way to say we have our doors open. It's another thing to say to actually go out there and look for these people and take them by the hand and bring them in. That's something that's pretty important. So certainly, and I can see some agreeing, certainly a lot more work at large structures at the national level. And this is a challenge that I send over to the at large structures. We have a lot of work on our plate, but I know that we can succeed in this. And there have been some real success stories out there. So if it's been done already, it's not something that is impossible to do. Any last words from our panelists? Andres?
Well, I don't think I have a lot of only want to thank for the opportunity of being here and want to be at entire disposal of any participating of this meeting. So just wanted to point out that and not me, but only that, but also LACNIC and the IARs are at the disposal of the ICANN community, that at the at-large community especially. That's my point.
Thank you, Andres. Avery, are you still on? Are you still unable to get into your other call?
Olivia, I believe she's dropped. She has dropped.
Yeah. Okay, so Avery, if you can hear us, you can type your last words and I'll read it to the record. Bill Drake?
I'll just respond. There were two questions in the chat to me about my comment on the WSIS Plus 10. If you look at the agenda of the WSIS Plus 10 event, it is not really going to be a situation where there's any kind of collective contemplation and dialogue about the nature of multi-stakeholderism, the status of the global information society, and so on. They've loaded up with a lot of panels, speakers, and workshops, and so on. So it's almost becoming more like a kind of IGF type event where just
a lot of folks will be expressing views on a lot of different topics than being one where there will be any collective negotiation or intensive drill down into taking stock of where we are 10 years after WSIS and so on. And I think that, in a way, that's probably a bit of a pity and missed opportunity, but it's also the case that it's a way of avoiding political contention. You don't hear a lot of government people worrying at great length. Plus 10 meetings, there's a reason for that. Nobody is worried. It's not a place where anything can go wrong, nor is it a place where anything is going to get much of the light really shed on in terms of a collective test. So, it's worth going, and some of us will be speaking at it and so on, but I don't think it's a turning point in any way. Certainly not with regard to Internet governance. Bear in mind that WSIS was much broader than Internet governance, at least in terms of the original agenda that was laid out in 2003, and that there's a lot of action lines and other things to be talked about. So there will be, there'll be plenary sessions about e-education, stuff like that. It's not going to be focusing very intensively on issues of local concern. I'll stop.
Thank you very much, Bill. And finally, Nigel Hickson, any final words?
Only to say to you, thank you very much, and Heidi and everyone else for organizing this call. I certainly found it very, very useful indeed. And, it's really great having the opportunity to participate in these webinars. I wish more parts of the ICANN community do it. We could do a good one with the GAC, I would have thought. But perhaps I better not go there, as they say. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Nigel. And with you having stolen all my lines and all the thanks that I wanted to do, I just have to thank everyone else who has joined us on the call. It's been very interesting. The recording of this call will be made available, and of course the transcript as well. It will be sent to your respective organizations, and if you are coming from outside, then please do check on the agenda page, and the recording and the transcript will be on there. And with this, it's good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And this meeting and call is now adjourned. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.